For marketing agencies and social media managers looking to prove the value of their work, I've got something special for you. Agora Pulse is not only Social Media Examiner's tool of choice as an all-in-one social media management tool, it also allows you to track the traffic, conversion, and revenue from every social post, comment, and private message. Learn how to prove your social media ROI with a free training or a free trial by visiting agorapulse.com/SME today. Again, agorapulse.com/SME.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Talk Show, your guide to the ever-changing world of social media.
Welcome to the Social Media Marketing Talk Show, a Social Media Examiner production. I'm Eric Fischer. My co-host is Grace Duffy. And this is the show for marketers looking to stay on the leading edge of social media. We bring you expert opinions about relevant social media news and how it impacts you. Instagram has added horizontal video support to IGTV. And on today's show, we're going to explore how this will affect the Instagram platform as well as other video news for marketers. And we will be talking with Luria Petrucci and David Foster. Just as a reminder, everything we talk about in this episode, all the links, the details, the notes, they'll all be in the Saturday post from Social Media Examiner, which you can find at socialmediaexaminer.com/news. Let's introduce our guests. So Luria Petrucci and David Foster are the live streaming pros, and they can make you one too. They also have a brand new podcast called Create Live, which you can find at anchor.fm/createlive. And that's CRE8Live. And welcome to the show. Welcome back to the show, both of you. Great to see you again.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here again.
Hello.
It's always fun.
You brought both of us at the same time. That's a little scary.
We had so much news to cover. We needed like double trouble. We needed double coverage here.
That's what you got.
I don't know what got me thinking that it was a good idea, but let's just run with it.
Well, Allie said I missed the t-shirt memo today. Yes, we're t-shirt buddies today.
Luria and I are both wearing the I Go Live shirt, which you guys provide, by the way. So let's jump into this. So IGTV, this has been out for just under a year. June 20th of 2018 was when it launched. And so we're coming up on its 1 year anniversary, its birthday. And I was recently talking with people on our social platforms, asking them about their usage of IGTV and if this new change of them adding landscape video capability to it was going to change anything for them. But before we get into that, I want to do honestly, just a brief recap of what the baby's milestones have been in this past year, when it rolled out, what it was, maybe even your first impressions. Let's start there, actually. So when this first rolled out last year and it was all vertical video and it was on Instagram only, what was your first impressions, both of you?
So my first impression, I really liked the fact that they were pulling out portrait video, because for me, I liked seeing what some people were doing with it, like Jesse Driftwood and people like that, how they were taking that portrait mode video and making a real story out of it. But I quickly realized after going into the app several times that once you saw something from someone you knew, it showed you a bunch of stuff that I didn't want to see. And I couldn't find, like, the discovery process was not good at all. So it probably lasted a week for me of actually like trying to make some content for it and trying to figure it out before I was like, I just don't get it, like the discovery process. So I fell off of it very quickly just because of that experience.
We actually attempted to create vertical video in a manner that you would actually take care with a horizontal video, right? So like we tried to frame it right. We tried to do the graphics correct. We tried to do some creative like double camera shots kind of up and down in a vertical mode. Like we tried to kind of go there, and it was so hard, right? From a creator perspective, it's so hard to actually create in vertical video. And it was just a bigger, more difficult process to actually fit into the platform. With stories and everything, it's a lot easier, but with actual IGTV video, it's a lot harder. So we had mixed feelings about it for sure.
Yeah. So I kind of felt the same way. Like I jumped in and was like, okay, this is interesting. This feels like, this is like if YouTube and Instagram stories had a baby, but it's almost neither one of them at the same time. Right. Yeah. It's like, and like you were saying, the pains of creating not highly produced, but at least produced to a quality that you want to strive for, will be difficult for that platform.
Well, and just to say my argument for that was how we could embrace that portrait video is because Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram all support portrait video. So I was like, well, why don't we start being portrait video creators? Because that's going to be a thing. And, you know, we quickly realized that it's harder than you would think.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's walk through then from that launch through to now really quickly, some of the things that Instagram has been doing over time to get us to say, maybe take notice of their baby, this IGTV baby. So first off in September 2018, so a full 3-4 months later after they'd launched it, they started to have IGTV notifications start to appear above the stories bar in the Instagram app. And that was okay. It was like, oh, cool. Somebody I know, somebody I'm following on stories, they have an IGTV video. And for me, that kind of hooked me in maybe once or twice. But then I kind of was like, eh, I don't know about you, but that's kind of what happened for me. Didn't really do the same. Then in November of 2018, IGTV started to allow IGTV sharing in stories. So again, now let's hook IGTV into one of our most popular products we've got, stories, and make it so that you can have, and even more recently, they've made it to where there's like a seamless transition. Grace, well, you had an experience recently that you were telling me about with this.
Oh, yeah. So I was watching, I guess I was in stories and I saw someone I follow, they had an IG video, IGTV video. I didn't realize it was, I thought I was just following their story and it seamlessly went into IGTV. Like there wasn't even a blip. There wasn't even a transition. Suddenly I was watching the full IGTV. So it was just this seamless transition between the two.
Yeah. So, and that was curious to me to be able to, you know, be in stories and then somebody shares an IGTV video over from IGTV into stories and you start watching it in stories. And then without you knowing it, you're in IGTV.
I honestly think that's the only way they're going to get legs on this thing. Because like I said, once you end up in IGTV, then like the video that comes next after the person you wanted is always a really weird, like out of place video for me that I'm like, how in the world am I seeing? It's like not even in English sometimes.
Oh no.
Yeah. So the algorithm in terms of what they're serving you in IGTV is really where it's failing for you is what I'm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But, and that may be that just not enough people that we want to be watching their stuff on.
Right.
Is doing it there.
Yeah. Yep. I only know of two people who are actually doing it on a regular basis, and that's Jasmine Starr and Gary Vee. You know,
I think it was Jasmine's video I was actually watching where, it was actually her story. And then it was a preview into, And she does an amazing job. I mean,
she really does.
Yeah.
Well, and another thing I noticed too is actually in the home feed, or I don't know if they call it news feed on Instagram or whatever, but the main feed, I'll see a video and it'll play part of it. Then it'll say continue watching on IGTV. Now that also is a turnoff for me. I don't want to have to jump over, and I usually don't.
Keep going with your timeline.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, that you actually just referenced the next thing, which is in February, they started to roll out these IGTV preview videos. It's the first minute. So you want to make sure your first minute is good in the main feed of Instagram as you're going through. So, but you're saying you've got to actually click through. Does it take you over there seamlessly at all? No.
It says finish watching on IGTV. You just click it and you're in. But the thing is, because of the experience I have once I'm in there, I don't like to go back in there.
Well, and I don't spend enough time to have a negative experience from the algorithm perspective. But remember when I was on this show and that had just happened and I was like, hey, let's see the positive here. I think this is going to be a really great thing to see IGTV in the news feed. I think it's great. I watch all of those previews that come through. I think it's a really easy way to see Jasmine's videos, right? But then I never click through. Not because of the bad algorithm experience, but I just, that's another step for me. And I feel like I've gotten enough out of the video at that point that I'm never convinced to spend more time. And since Instagram is a quick, fast paced kind of activity, you're scrolling, you're moving fast. I feel like I've just never clicked through to that IGTV. Now, Trish is saying that when they started posting their IGTV videos, they saw a huge boost in viewership. So maybe people are clicking through. Maybe I'm just completely lazy.
Maybe it is just that IGTV is counting someone watching any or all of that 1 minute that's over on Instagram.
Yeah.
So of course you're going to see it late. Yeah. But does that mean there's actual hot air inside of it or not? I don't know.
That's good point.
One other
thing. We switched our metaphor.
Yes. Now we're at the baby's birthday party. We're filling up the balloons. Anyway, a couple of weeks ago, we had Jen Herman on this show, and we talked all about how the Instagram Explore tab was adding in more IGTV. To go into all that, go back to that show. However, the one main thing to take away from that is that now you can go to the Explore tab in Instagram. And I was seeing a lot of people that I was following. And if they're doing any IGTV stuff, they're showing up there. And if I tap on it, by the way, I deleted the IGTV app just to make sure that this still worked. And it would play the full IGTV video inside of Instagram without taking me out of the app at all. So new status quo of some sort, I don't know. But anyway, that's not really what we're here to talk about, but that's all context to go into landscape video as of a week ago is now an option on IGTV. However, that doesn't mean that this is the first time people have been posting landscape video.
Gary Vee's been doing it, and he just has a little thing that says rotate your phone at the beginning. Because all you had to do is turn your phone and then you had landscape.
Now, see, there's the thing is like I heard from somebody as we were talking about this coming out that up until this point, people posting landscape video to where it was you had to turn it. The IGTV video preview that would come through the Instagram news feed was also turned. So it was like, you're swiping and it's like, huh?
And that probably is the case. However, I think that a lot of people just don't utilize the feature where you can actually upload your own custom thumbnail in IGTV so that it wouldn't be that way, right? Yeah. Until it started playing.
All of that to say, landscape video, widescreen video, whatever you want to, a horizontal video even. Man, there's so many names for this stuff. That's like live streaming and live video. What's your impression? Do you think this is going to make any difference at all? I mean, from where I'm coming from, your expressions, as well as the stuff we just went through, there's still right. happen on this platform for it to be fully adoptable is what I'm guessing.
I think if they had launched with it, it would have adopted better, to be honest. So I think that, yes, now, like I'm actually going to be taking our YouTube videos and now we can put those on IGTV very easily without having to create for that platform. So great. Yay. Another distribution platform. Will it make any difference? Who knows? I think it's almost too little too late. Right. So I think people will throw it there. But because of the view problems and the algorithm problems, and I'm sure more people are experiencing that other than David. So, like you're saying, there's too much other stuff that is a problem. Mm. And so I don't think getting to that video is effective enough. But I mean, I'll put it there to see now that I don't have to create in portrait mode anymore.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of like I honestly feel that's the wrong approach because if you're creating content, it should be for a platform. Now there's some platforms that are similar.
Yes.
But my take on the landscape is I think that they should have focused on things that matter most for discovery and actually getting action on that platform. Because if the four of us here kind of have the same feeling.
Yeah,
I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that a lot of people have the same feeling we do. And I think that there are people that are probably using it because they think, well, it's just a distribution platform. I'm just going to put it up there. They're not putting much thought into it and everything like that. They might not actually be users of the platform other than that. Like they don't watch people's stuff. They just post stuff. Yeah. So I just feel like they should have focused on something that made a difference to discovery, to the algorithm and making things that make it an easy transition to go into, like not where it feels separate, where it feels like it's part of Instagram, yeah. not a separate thing.
See, and I feel like that last update with the Explore tab kind of starts to get us close to that threshold. Yeah. But again, you know, I've got to wonder, like Luria, you said, like with repurposing or broadcasting or whatever you want to call it, that this is, hey, it's yet another channel. I got a lot of people saying that in the Facebook post when we were talking with them about this. And, you know, do you think we're going to see a lot more people posting their YouTube videos or even downloading their Facebook Live and then uploading that to IGTV? And is that really what we want this to be?
I personally wouldn't, because I'm already seeing that content on YouTube and Facebook. The thing that I really liked about IGTV when it first launched was the fact that it took a lot of creativity to make a portrait mode video. Like if you go look at Jesse Driftwood or some of the original videos Nick Niman did on IGTV, the transitions and stuff that they used and everything, it was just an amazing way to do something different. And mm-hmm. I think that that's like what that IG app. Initially, when it launched, had going for it. It was different. It was something that, you know, but we noticed that a lot of people didn't really embrace it. And I think it's because they separated it at first. If they would have launched that integrated into Instagram the way everything else is, like stories, I think it probably would have had more legs and done a lot better.
Yeah.
You're saying you really think that this is maybe contrary to the true nature of the platform that they originally launched. And really, it wasn't that the platform itself was faulty. It's that the way that it was integrated, or better yet said, not integrated into the full app, was really maybe its stumbling point.
Yeah, I think all they would have had to have done is increased, like just said, okay, you're creating stories already. Now you can upload videos into stories, which you already can do, but let's just increase the length of them. It's basically all it is an increased length of story. So you could just increase the length and have the same integration. Everything's exactly the same. No new app or anything like that. It's just, you change the length.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like what they're working towards now anyway. It seems like they kind of went back, and now they're moving backwards back into that, where it is integrated and it is seamless, right? But
yeah, because the thing is, if I have a story to tell, if I can tell a 10-15 second stories or combine it into one long story, what is the difference?
Now, as a use case of kind of what you're talking about, so Michael Hyatt's social team recently at his event did an amazing job with stories produced like a video, right? So it was like a video, but there were just individual story components to it. And it was like a really fast pace, like not promotional video, but like a, hey, this is the excitement at this event. And it was produced extremely well. They chopped it into story bits. And I thought that was a great use case. Marissa did a fantastic job at that. And so that's something else to consider, is maybe instead of IGTVs, we take that approach and we chop up a video in that style and use our stories to get it seen.
Talking about it, and they do a great job. And, you know, I mean, ultimately, and that's the other opposite. That's the option there, is you could theoretically do both things. You could take that long form story-esque video and chop it and have it be actual stories like they did, but also just take that exact thing and put it out there as one long form IGTV thing that's going to sit there for longer than 24 hours in the FOMO window.
Well, and if you can actually put a story or IGTV now into a story, you could actually do that anyway, right? I mean, you're saying that you can add an IGTV to a story, so you could shoot that whole thing, put it into your story the same way you would, and tell, you know, because the thing is, you can edit that the exact same way. You can add all the overlays and stuff, and then you, like I said, if they just increase the length, have it so that at different sections you can change the graphics or whatever, but have it be one long thing.
Yeah, we have a question here from Mike Alton. He was saying that he's pushing back on the idea that you have to create content for every platform. Specifically, he uses this example, do authors only write for Barnes & Nobles if they have a choice?
No, I'm saying like the format. So thing is, like, if you're doing IGTV and you're just uploading a YouTube video that's landscape, you know, or whatever mode, and not taking it and cutting it down into portrait, which is native to the platform, is all I'm saying. I'm not saying that like the same content wouldn't work. I'm saying the format, like YouTube end screens, like putting those on your Facebook videos, it's a disconnect. If those end screens then are on your Instagram video, it's like, it makes you look lazy as a creator, because then people are like, oh, they just uploaded the same video to here. And it's not exclusive to that audience, because there are some people on Facebook that hate YouTube. There's people on YouTube that hate Facebook and stuff like that. And you're trying to force them into that ecosystem. So when we were doing content specific for each platform, we were changing the endings. We were adding a different intro. Hey, Facebook, or hey, YouTube, that thing, because it's less personal if you just mass put out your content.
Yeah. We had the same with somebody cross posting their Instagram stories over to Facebook, where they were saying, you know, hey, Instagram, da 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 da. It's like, it's on Facebook, dude. I know there's a tool out there actually that you upload the video and it will then, through AI, like see where the action is happening in your landscape video and trip, you know, kind of like guide it to trim points or camera angles to where it will focus in on in vertical video to transform it and export out something that would then be able to be used.
That's interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Takes away your control as a creator, but well, you can actually, you the lazy option for sure. Like, but that's interesting.
It shows you what it suggests. You can always go in and change it.
Oh,
figure out where that tool is. I know I did it months ago on Mike's podcast. So, well, let's move on from Instagram, I believe, unless there's any other questions, Grace, that are pertinent towards this.
No, I think we've covered all of them.
Okay, good. Well, let's move over then. So speaking of YouTube, let's move over to YouTube. There was, it's not YouTube news per se, but I think that it's appropriate to talk about because it's a study that, was it The Verge? The Verge brought up that the trending section of the YouTube algorithm and discovery method. And they talked about how they did a bunch of work. They basically did a bunch of work and they basically crowdsourced 40,000 videos. And long story short, they said basically big names don't have to get as many views to get into the trending section. Whereas YouTube creators that are native to the platform, they have to get so much more to get into trending. And I almost want to say first, like, would you agree that like, video creators that are looking to show up in the search or recommended videos aren't necessarily going to be counting on showing up in trending. They're looking more to, especially even marketers, like trending is for the popular or the big name stuff. They're not even trying to go to there. They're trying to be seen and found based on algorithm and search and the value they provide first.
But why?
Well, I think that the reason that they're doing that is because they're forced to. You know, because if it was a fair playing field and they would get into trending, like Philip DeFranco tries to get in trending all the time, but because he's considered controversial, like in other countries, he trends 80, 90 times, whatever. But in the US, he's trending like twice based on the same amount. Like, I think he needs like 1.4 million views or something to reach that to reach into trending. So I think that the fact that YouTubers have to think outside of the box and try to figure out how to beat the system because they're not treated equally in the trending is the problem.
So ultimately, we wish it was more democratized, that it was more fair.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Because if you think about it, that's YouTube deciding what they think is good enough content. So it's like all of your major shows like Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, you know, Daily Show and all that. They need a lot less views to get into trending than creators. But at the end of the day, they're not YouTube creators. They're not native to the platform. They're doing a show and it just happens to be getting repurposed over there and they're getting all the love from YouTube. Whereas it's the creators that have built that platform. They're the ones working their butts off every single week to put up videos and putting a lot into it. And for them to not be seen in the trending area is kind of, you know, I think it's backwards thinking on YouTube's part, because if it wasn't for the creators, there would be nobody to run ads against anyway, other than these mainstream shows.
And it all boils down to, you know, in the beginning of YouTube and all of this whole content creation world, in the beginning, the idea was, and the attraction of this was that nobody could tell you that you can't build an audience. Nobody had the control to say you're good enough for TV, you're not good enough for TV. You had control and the audience did, right? So if we go back to that, the old days of when it all started and why we're doing this stuff in the first place, then you come back to, oh, wait, hold on. You're looking at all of these trending analytics, and this the video that I'm sure you guys are linking to is pretty impressive and eye-opening from that perspective. And now we're flip-flopping. Okay, so now YouTube is taking a little bit more control and showcasing these big names, and down we drop, right? So from an emotional perspective as a creator, it's a big deal because you don't have the access anymore like we once did. And to take it a step further, it's like beyond trending. If I go into the live discovery page, all of that stuff is like, I first see Dr. Phil. I've never watched Dr. Phil in my life. Like, what? Why am I seeing all these big names when I want to go discover some live streamers that I would actually find interesting, right? So right. It's the same. Trending and the live discovery is both working the same way. And it's very frustrating.
Well, and I think too, from a mainstream news standpoint, it's almost like YouTube is legitimizing some of these news channels that I think are, I don't trust anything they say because they're like 100% opinion. And it's saying that they're more legitimate than somebody like Philip DeFranco, who takes a very diplomatic approach to news and actually, you know, does some journalism. So it's like they're almost like deciding the winners and losers of what we can consume. And I don't like that. These algorithms never have me figured out because I don't watch that stuff. So I think it's also a dangerous thing politically because it's like they're saying this is good news. This is illegitimate news.
I hear what you're saying. I definitely hear what you're saying. But then, I mean, on Facebook, like they got rid of their trending section because it just wasn't relevant. Right. And so they replaced that space with stories, by the way. But so, it was about what was popular in general. But now I think with all the changes happening with Instagram and on Facebook, the focus is always just is now on personalization, right? There's like this personalized feed. When they integrated IGTV into the Explore tab in Instagram, it was personalized to me and what I'm interested in based on what I'm already looking at, right? So no Dr. Phil for me either, by the way. So isn't that what our focus should be? Or, I mean, are we off on that?
I think that it's the thing is like they always try to figure us out with an algorithm.
Stop figuring us
that
out.
Is never right. Like I don't understand why they don't just I would say take similar tags or I want to see stuff that's like similar to what I'm already watching. It's like they show you stuff that's so contrasted to what I like. I'm like, why are they getting this? Which tells me these algorithms are all wrong. And it's like that now there's algorithms coming out for like Crime Watch with cameras and stuff. And they're going to start figuring out like, if you're going to be a criminal, it's like, you know, it's like, where is this going? I don't want to be, have all these algorithms and stuff because they're never right for me.
I think our baby has grown up. Now it's a teenager and it's slamming the door. You don't understand me.
That is in those teenage years. If you think about when it started,
Sure.
When I saw this, this article, this report, I went and said, you know what does trending look like for me personally? And I went to my mobile phone. I went to the desktop and then I also went to the TV because surprisingly or not, I watch a lot of YouTube on my television, especially with my
kids. Yeah, we do as well.
Trending shows up differently in all three of those places. So really TV is primarily where that actually shows up. But only when I first fire it up, and then I go away from it, kind of like how you press down, and then that row on Netflix is now no longer there. You know, the rare comedic comedy horror whatever. That you anyway,
it's all true crime over there. Anyway, don't worry about it. It's all true crime.
But what was funny was I did a search for corgi breeding here in Indiana 2 days ago, and then on YouTube. It suddenly showed me like corgi racing, which was hilarious because we all sat down in my family and watched it last night. But so I guess what I'm here to say is I'm not paying attention to trending per se. It's more the algorithm serving me up stuff that's like what you guys are doing. You guys are in there, like what I'm subscribed to, which is you guys as well as a few other specific channels. And then what I'm actually watching. And then also now, obviously, what I'm searching for online, which is more scary to me. be honest.
Well, I think that the difference is kind of like what you're talking about, the discovery process for similar stuff, related content, is based on your viewing habits, or it tries to be as much as possible. And trending is what YouTube thinks you should be watching. That's more moderated by them. Like, they have some algorithm that is set to decide what they think based on. I don't even think it's based on what you watch. I think it's just based on what they want to get legs on for the ad dollars. Yeah. I mean, it's all about ad money, really.
So as an advertiser, wouldn't you say that this benefits you? Because then if you're advertising against that content, it's being seen by more people. But is it being seen by the right people?
Right. And that's the thing. I hate the fact that they, because like they're in the video that you're talking about here, they actually show that some creators have similar content. You know, they might swear a little bit or something like that, but they're doing that also on the shows like, you know, the mean tweets and stuff like that, or the Daily Show. So they have different criteria like that decides that for creator and for these mainstream sources. So it's almost like that, even if you have a very similar show, you're not getting favored. So the fact that YouTube is deciding that is, I don't know. Yeah. And the fact that they're, and based on the advertisers are now scared to be on this creator, but not on the Daily Show, where you're getting very similar content. I think that's not fair to the creator.
As an advertiser, though, you have more chance of getting the right eyeballs in the traditional advertising sense with something like the late show or whatever. So, right. So versus trying to get down and nitty gritty into who your person is. And right. So as a traditional advertising problem, you want more eyeballs, and the people who are advertising on those big shows are people with more advertising budgets. So there's a big difference between me as an advertiser creating content that I want to display to my ideal avatar versus big name advertisers with big budgets who are just trying to splash their name across the world. It's very different of a conversation for who you're talking to. And of course, YouTube likes those big named advertisers
because of the budgets. Exactly. No, that's a good point. We are glad to get your perspective on it because, you know.
In the industry report that's still out there, it was out there now, what, 3 weeks, something like that, 3-4 weeks. The industry report that we put out annually, 71% of marketers said they plan on increasing their use of YouTube video, and 75% want to learn more about marketing on that platform. So as creators, as marketers on YouTube, what would you say if, you know, I mean, basically we're going with the assumption that, yes, this report is true. Trending, much more difficult for us as lower numbered accounts, whatever you want to call it, marketers, YouTubers, YouTube creators. It's much less likely that we're going to show up in trending. So what then what then should be our target in terms of the value that we're going to get out of creating content for YouTube?
Well, so YouTube has a lot of things that they're working on in the back end that's going to make it easier for people with bigger audiences. So things like overlays, where you can gather leads on your video and not leave, or buy t-shirts from your store over the video and never leave the video. So they're working on different things like that that'll be overlaid on top of YouTube. And that's going to really allow creators that have bigger audiences than even these mainstream shows to take advantage of, not take advantage of their audience, but get access to their audience to do things to fund their show without the advertisers. And I think that's going to be the key for creators, is just not relying on the advertisers, because if a creator says one wrong thing, they're demonetized, whereas a mainstream show isn't. So they have to figure out how to think outside the box. So if YouTube's willing to put these tools out to help them do that, I think that's going to be a good thing for the creators.
And outside of that, obviously we have the power to show up in the search, right? If we're doing the right kind of content as marketers. And then of course the ads themselves. Like I did an expert training session that we're releasing to our Create Live membership tomorrow, actually, about YouTube ads, from one of our students who runs a marketing agency using YouTube ads. And man, the information that he gave was just incredibly powerful from an advertiser's perspective, which none of us take advantage of like we should, right? And so there's a lot of unfilled space with YouTube, he said, with YouTube ads or Google ads in general. And then the way you can target your ideal audience, I mean, he went through detailed and showed us how you can really target into the right audience and create custom ads specifically for this particular audience. And if you have like three avatars, you can create three different ads for those specific people. And I mean, it's just, it's actually very incredibly powerful. And from a marketer's perspective, we're not taking advantage of YouTube like we could, in addition to all of the searchable content that we should be creating as
That's
well.
That's because everybody's still focused on Facebook ads so heavily.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, right. Absolutely.
Well, and we talked about some of the falterings of that last week.
Yeah.
Tune in to that show if you want to get more on that. Let's roll into the one final piece of news that we have in your segment here, which is something actually, Luria, that we talked to you about already when it came out on Periscope, and now it's coming out on Twitter, which I got to say, I'm still confused like crazy about the fact that, that they basically have one and now another that's powered by the other one. It's that whole, it's actually like it's the IGTV thing all over again, where it's like, hey, we got here and here and they're together, yet they're separate. And what?
At the end of the day, they're both Periscope.
At the end of the day, it is.
Yeah. So let's just tell our listeners what the news is. So Twitter mobile users can now start a live broadcast. So they're on live, right? And they can bring on, and they can start this in within the mobile app, and they can invite up to three guests to join them on an audio only basis. And this feature is available on iOS and Android. And this is literally the same thing they rolled out to Periscope 3 months ago in February, right? Or January, I guess, whatever. Anyway, it's the same. Go on.
Well, the fact that it's on Periscope, I'm glad that they bring them on audio only at first, because the people that we usually get on Periscope, we wouldn't want to bring on live, I don't think.
Oh, but well, it's so funny because I don't know if this is for sure or not, but it's rumored that they're making it so that you as the host can see your guests on video, so you can interact with them, do the eye contact, whatever, but everyone else still sees them as audio. I don't know if that's for real happening, but I thought that was funny.
I don't know. I know, David, you have a stat that you could share with us, but you guys, you teach about live video and live streaming. And I wanted to ask, like, what percentage can you estimate of your students are using Periscope versus the other live video platforms?
1%. At the max, probably at max. We have a couple of students who use it and use it effectively. There are some people using Periscope effectively, or Twitter Live, or whatever we're calling it. I don't even think, to answer your earlier question, that even Twitter knows what they're doing with it. I'm sorry. I don't like to say that, but I don't get the impression that they really know how to integrate Periscope and Twitter Live. But
well, and I just want to show you something here. For this is from Dustin Stout's website. You guys know Dustin. Dustin is awesome. He does social media statistics every year. And so if you look at these stats, based on users and everything, if you scroll down here past WhatsApp, even past G+, okay, which just died, past Twitter, past Snapchat, Reddit, LinkedIn, Periscope, Tumblr.
Even Tumblr.
And then you've got Periscope.
So in terms of like
registered users, daily users and stuff like that. You're looking at something that is basically the bottom of the social media barrel.
Yeah.
But and the thing is, like, we used to do Periscope. We would stream to three places. Yeah. Periscope was one of them. And we just always got really bad, like negative. It was worse than some, like you can get negative comments on Twitch and Mixer, like gaming channels.
Yeah.
This was like a new level of low,
really?
Of trolls. Yeah. And so
especially for women.
Yeah.
Too. Like and Periscope don't often mix very well, unless you're going for that kind of thing. But it is a very bad experience for most women on Periscope because of the troll factor and the lack of moderation tools. That's the key, is the fact that you don't have moderation tools the way you should. You have to moderate. You can't assign an admin or an assistant or moderators to your account to be able to do that. The way the moderation tools work are just not effective or efficient. So it's at its core. If we had moderation, it wouldn't be so bad.
Right. And
but
I think
it's also the Twitter audience in general is kind of more negative or goes there really quickly, as we saw with the Microsoft AI experiment. that bleeds over into Periscope and Twitter Live.
Well, and I think the only reason Periscope hasn't gone way of Meerkat is because it's Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, so if they didn't have Twitter there, I think Periscope would already be gone.
Yeah.
If it was its own thing.
Yes. So it's a very small percentage of people who are using it at the end of the day.
If you ever want to see
some people doing it effectively, for most people, they're not getting it effective.
And that was a very unsatisfying experience. So I have to say I like video better.
Well, it depends on who you have on, because that's what I was getting at. When I there was a couple of times when I was doing trainings and I opened it up for anybody to come on camera. And I remember this one time this guy came on, and as soon as he came on, he's laying in a bed sideways with no shirt on. And he's like, hi.
Whoa.
I'm like, okay, we're not doing that anymore.
Anytime I bring people on video, like I do Instagram live videos, and I'll bring people on and just let the guests chat or ask questions or whatever. But every time I do that, I always say pants are required. And I make a joke out of it, right? But like any time, that's true of any time you have a video guest that you haven't pre-qualified or anything like that, right? So you should do the same on Instagram, because it could happen. It's just more likely to happen on Periscope or Twitter Live. See, I don't even know whether to say Periscope or Twitter Live.
Pre-qualify your guests.
Or make a joke out of it and take the risk.
You know, Jasmine Starr had the same advice. She was on Mike's podcast recently talking about IGTV and her process for, and she talked about her rules for inviting someone on. And I can't quite remember. I don't want to quote it because I don't want to misquote it, but they were awesome. But it was stuff like, you get on there, you get one question, you take up this much time. If you spend, you know, it was just very cool. Yeah. So,
and it's a good rule of thumb to use whatever you're doing in your audience in terms of training your audience of what to do when XYZ happens, right? Especially live video, but like having rules and making sure you're stating them, not once, not just at the beginning, but often throughout the conversation. Every time you're about to bring somebody on, you restate those rules, you make it fun. Jasmine does it really well, right? So like you have to train your audience in terms of those kinds of rules, especially on live video, but anywhere.
Now, I mean, on typical live video, they're not giving you audio only guests. This is the only place that they're kind of allowing that. It's either text-based questions that you see and are replying to, or like this, we have guests and you can see them and interact with them, et cetera. Do you feel like this missing middle piece is important, or does it matter or not? I don't know.
I think actually it could actually be a better experience for the viewers, because what happens a lot of times when you're interviewing somebody is once you get the bandwidth of two coming in, like their video could be pixelated and look bad. So that way your audio generally goes through pretty well,
right?
Because audio is not much information going through the pipes. So it'd be a better experience for the viewers to hear that, rather than seeing somebody like, oh, can you hear me? Oh, you're breaking up. Your video looks choppy. Can you move into a better sitting? You know what I mean? So
lighting,
you're
going to
have less things like that. Yeah, you don't have to worry about if they're lit, if they're in a good place or whatever.
And then there is the fear factor of people joining. Even though we teach live video, like half the people don't want to join us because they're scared of camera. And so it provides many benefits, but I don't think it's a desired feature from anyone. And so maybe if Periscope or Twitter Live did it really successfully, then it would become a desired feature. But even Facebook killed off their audio only feature for live video. So
give us editing tweets first and then video without audio.
Well said.
Or with audio.
I agree. I concur. I concur.
Well, David, Luria, it's been great talking with you as usual. I'm glad we didn't lose you. I would love to have you one more time give the URL for where people can find you on Live Streaming Pros as well as create.
Yeah. So we're at livestreamingpros.com where we offer training, and we're live on social, Twitter, YouTube, every three days a week. Did I say Twitter?
Yeah, you did.
Facebook and YouTube 3 days a week. And our community. So we've built out Create Live, CRE8Live.com, where it is the community for live streamers. We wanted to build a place that isn't just about us, but offers a place for different communities, different influencers to come to train on live video, but to coach, but to be a community and a true community outside of the Facebook and YouTube algorithms. So
no algorithms on our side.
Yeah. Nice. Just humans.
Nice. Yep, just humans.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here as usual.
Thank you.
I'll be back soon and talk with you soon again. Thank you very much.
See ya. You're welcome. Thank you for having us.
Bye, guys. Bye. All right. Great to talk
with
them.
That was fun. That was fun.
I do want to give this disclaimer. I had a lot of fun. Jeff C and I did have a lot of fun hanging out with them in San Diego for Social Media Marketing World, because they were the ones that were putting on the live stage broadcast, the feed there. So we spent a lot of time with them. And so I miss you guys. Good to talk with you again. But anyway.
Bye. We have a couple blurbs. We have a couple blurbs. Speaking of Twitter, Twitter is hiring a tweeter in chief. So this is an actual job. Their job will be to run the @Twitter account. So you can read the full job description on Twitter's career site. San Francisco Chronicle did a great write-up on it to highlight some of the bigger points. And their job is to spark conversation and highlight what unites us, making the platform and world feel like a little smaller. So I think take that to mean that they'll be, anytime anyone tweets at Twitter about Twitter, they will be the ones handling it. They're going to be setting up editorial guidelines, leading the team of incredible community managers, and every day reacting to culture as it happens. And the main, most important skill for this job is you have to be fun.
You better be, because if you're the person behind the @Twitter account taking the complaints from Twitter people themselves on Twitter, you better be fun. That's all
about that. You're never sleeping again.
No. So in other news, Facebook is developing a shake to report feature. So when you're super frustrated with Facebook on your phone, you just shake your phone. And it will say, would you like to report an error, basically? And I mean, I can't think of a better way to instigate a, you know, submitting a report to Facebook about their app than to, it's like, oh, and it pops up and it's like, would you like to report an error? Yeah. Oh, how'd you know? Like, it makes natural sense that you would shake it in the accelerometer. Yeah, this guy's not happy with your app. So.
So this is an opt-in feature on iOS now, and they're going to make it a default on iOS and Android. But Eric, is the shaking to report thing a thing now? Is that something that's happening?
I don't know.
Because there was another app I was on yesterday. I think it was like some sort of, it was a local coffee chain or whatever. And I got on their app to get the points or whatever. And there was something on there where you had to like shake to do something. I think it was like shake to find the nearest location. I was just like, is this a thing? Like, is this another way to like break your phone and have to buy a new one? So.
No, I don't think we should be shaking other than to like, even when I shake and it does the, would you like to undo typing? I'm like, no, I just accidentally shook my hand. Sorry. Anyway, that's something they're developing, and it is out there. What was it? Opt-in on iOS now, a default setting for both iOS and Android. So
I thought that was a prank when I read that. I was like, okay, whatever. April Fools. last piece of news.
Snapchat news. That news from Snapchat. Yes. So Snapchat's continuing to add music licensing to its platform. And this is unconfirmed, by the way, but it was reported by the Wall Street Journal. And essentially Snap, again, where they excel is doing content on there and the faces, the filters and all that, but now adding in music. So Snap reportedly is seeking to add more music catalogs of Universal, Sony, Warner, to be able to use that inside of things. And the speculation is this is, you know, for them, this is them looking to compete with TikTok. And Facebook has been already doing this for a while.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we'll keep our eye on this space
I think this is just an ease of use and to help protect artists and as well as people that are uploading. And I mean, music is already on there anyway. When people are uploading stuff, their music's already on there. But this is just something to ease the legal issues, which I am nowhere near qualified to talk about. So I'll just leave it at that.
Neither am I. So for that matter, let's just say that's our show. Thank you so much for being here. Again, everything we talked about, details, links, breakdown, everything you want to dive into will be in the Social Media Marketing Talk Show recap that comes out every Saturday on Social Media Examiner, which you can find at socialmediaexaminer.com/news. By the way, this is an audio podcast as well, if you're not already listening to it as an audio podcast right now, in which case it's really redundant for me to say so. But if you join us live, you can get this as an audio podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher. Every episode comes out on Monday. Vice versa, you can get this on your calendar and join us when we record next week live by going to socialmediaexaminer.com/live show. And I want to say special thanks to Grace Duffy, our show producer and a great co-host.
Thank you, Eric, for being a great host and for Jeff C., who for handling our simulcast week after week. And a special thank you again to Luria and David for being our guests. It was an awesome, awesome conversation. I learned a lot. We did some turns and twists and turns I didn't think we'd go down, and I'm happy for it. I'm better for it.
So until next week's show, have a great weekend, have a great week, and we'll see you next episode.
Bye, everyone.
The Social Media Marketing Talk Show is a Social Media Examiner production. For more social media insight, visit socialmediaexaminer.com.
If you're like so many fellow marketers and creators and entrepreneurs, you're probably wondering, how do I put AI to work? Well, be sure to listen to the AI Explored podcast, a new show from Social Media Examiner, hosted by yours truly, Michael Stelzner. Again, check out the AI Explored podcast.